we left off last week, we were discussing a type of ownership, or perhaps a lack thereof, that a person has in something which is has kedushas ma'aseh sheni. So we quoted it as machlekes atanoim, conceptually, how to understand the concept of ma'aseh sheni, because ma'aseh sheni, on the one hand, is something that I'm going to use, I'm going to benefit from, I'm going to take it to Shalayim, nobody can stop me to do that. On the other hand, there are so many limitations on what I'm allowed to do with it. I can only eat it in Yerushalayim, I can only eat it with the Shiv Tahara. So the Tanoim and Machloik is, how do we view, in terms of the Imamunus, the role of Ma'aseh Sheni? According to Rabbi Meir, Ma'aseh Sheni Mamun Gavoh, it doesn't really belong to me, it really belongs to the Rabbanu Shalom. Rabbi Yehuda said no, the Chum said no, that Ma'aseh Sheni is Mamun Hedyot, that it really does belong to me, albeit with certain ritual limitations. So this machlekes spilled over in terms of the nimamunas, and the examples that the Gemara gave are one example in the realm of kedushin. Can you be mekadesh and isha with ma'aseh sheni? So if you hold that ma'aseh sheni is mamun gavoa, then the answer is no. If you hold that ma'aseh sheni is mamun hedyo, then the answer would be yes. Then the Gemara said it spills over to other questions in terms of mitzvahs as well. Is ma'aseh sheni considered to belong to me? Is it called lachem? Can I be otze the mitzvah dal minim with it? Is it called arisal seichem? Am I chayiv and chala in it? And can I be yotzei mitzvah matzah with it? Whenever the halacha requires lachem, it is ma'aseh sheni meet the mark of lachem for now. So we happen to pass in the halacha that ma'aseh sheni is in fact mamun gavoa. That's how the halacha the Gemara concludes, that we assume that ma'aseh sheni is mamun gavoa. Nevertheless, even within the view that ma'aseh sheni is mamun gavoa, there seems to be a further machlokes that we showed him, just what exactly that really means, just conceptually, analytically, what exactly does that term mean that ma'aseh sheni is mamun gavoa? So there's no question that we pass in. If you're Mekadosh and Isha with Ma'aseh Sheni, the Kedusha is not good. That's Yadua. That's another part. That's Mishnah. The Masechta is Kedusha. We follow the Halacha, the view of Rabbi Meir, that Mekadosh with Ma'aseh Sheni is the Mekudeshes. So when the Rambam in Luchos Ishus formulates this Halacha, he formulates it in a very, very strange way. The Rambam writes that if a person is Mekadosh and Isha with Ma'aseh Sheni, so the Kedusha is no good. And why is the Kedusha no good? So the Rambam gives you a whole story, because Ma'aseh Sheni is Kedusha and he's supposed to use it to eat, he's supposed to take the Shalayim, you're not supposed to use it to be Mekadosh Ishus with it. That's not the reason why she's not Mekadoshes. It's all true what the Rambam is saying, but it doesn't have to do with the topic. The Rambam should have said a Mekadosh with Ma'aseh Sheni is a Mekadoshes because it doesn't belong to you. Finish. And it's not yours. Now, the first mission in Kedusha, you have to be Mekadosh Ishus with Kesef. If I steal a ring and give it to a woman, or if I borrow a ring perhaps and give it to the woman's not Mekadoshes. The first question the Masada Kedusha asks under the Chuppah is, does this ring belong to you? Did you buy it with your own money? And sometimes the answer is, well, it's her credit cards. Yen's credit cards. That becomes fraud. You have to own the item that you're being mekadesh with. Kinyan kesef presupposes that you own the object. So if we pask in the halacha that Ma'aseh Sheni is mamun gavoa, it's not mine. So when the Masada Kedusha asks me, is a hand or a barrel of fruit? So the Masada Kedusha asks, is that barrel of fruit yours? So the answer is, it's not mine. It's the Rebbe Shalom. That's no good. That should have been the reason why the Rambam says that she's not Mekadesh. Why does the Rambam beat around the bush, give you a whole story, gives you a whole shiur in Hilchos Ma'aseh Sheni, what you can and can't do with Ma'aseh Sheni? He should have said simply, it's not considered to belong to you. So Reb Chaim is quoted by his son, the Rishka Rav, in his Chedushim Masechet Zvachim, as suggesting a pshat in the Rambam, that the Rambam has a very different understanding of what Ma'aseh Sheni Mamun Gavoha means. So Reb Chaim said that Ma'aseh Sheni Mamun Gavoha doesn't mean what we thought of it. Doesn't mean that the way we spent 40 minutes last week presenting it, that a Chesh Mishpah doesn't belong to you. He says, Reb Chaim, it doesn't belong to you. Who does it belong to? I grew in my field, I planted it, I'm going to eat it, of course it belongs to me. Ma'aseh Sheni Mamun Gavoha means that notwithstanding the fact that it does technically belong to you, you're not permitted to do certain actions with the Ma'aseh Sheni. Certain activities with Ma'aseh Sheni are off limits. What activities are off limits? Basically everything, with the exception of achila, with the exception of eating it. The Torah says you are permitted in Hilchos Issa B'Heter to do X, Y, and Z with Ma'aseh Sheni, but nothing else. And if you try to do other things with the Ma'aseh Sheni, the Torah is going to declare that not only did you do an Aveira by trying to sell the Ma'aseh Sheni, by trying to use the Ma'aseh Sheni for Kesef Kedushin, not only is that a bittul of the mitzvah Ma'aseh Sheni, but b'di'evet, whatever you try to do is going to be null and void. So according to the Reb Chaim's understanding of the Rambam, it's not that Chesh Mishpah dictates that it's not yours. It's not like I borrowed the ring, not like I stole the ring. It's mine, it is mine, I do have bailus on it. Ma'aseh Sheni Mamun Gavoha doesn't mean it's not mine. The Shevim Amgavo means that it is yours, but you have no right to do other kinds of activities with it. You have no shalita, you have no authority to sell it, you have no authority to Makadosh Anisha with it. All you can do with it, all the Torah permits you, this is what you have to do with it, is to take it and to eat it in Yerushalayim. And if you try to pull a stunt and use it for other purposes, so the Torah says, whatever you did is batel mevutel, whatever you did isn't going to be valid. So that's a very unique understanding of Ma'aseh Shenim Amgavoa. So other Rishonim don't find that. Ivan and others say, no, Ma'aseh Shenim Amgavoa means Pshita Kamashmo. Exactly what we thought it meant last week, that's what it means this week also. This razzle-dazzle new beer of the Rambam and Chaim is not correct. But Kopanim, this is just a continuation from last week, that we paskin Alokha Ma'aseh Shenim Amgavoa. There's no question about that. The Gemara paskins that explicitly. And we paskin that a Makadish with Ma'aseh Sheni staka not Makudashes, whether it's based on what we thought the simple pshat is, because it doesn't belong to me, or whether it's based on this elaborate pshat of Reb Chaim, so that's subject for a discussion. But tachas, the bottom line is, the Ma'aseh Sheni is Mamun Gavoh. Is there any nafkamina for us? The fact that Ma'aseh Sheni is Mamun Gavoh, I mean, we very rarely have these shilas of Makadish with Ma'aseh Sheni. We very rarely have these questions that we spoke about last week of Matzah Shemais Hasheni and Isa Shemais Hasheni and Esrik Shemais Hasheni. I mean, none of this really speaks to us, the halacha. Is there anything left for us practically that stems from this sugya with the Ma'aseh Hasheni is Mamun Gavoh and Hav? So there is a Gemara in the fourth parak of Maseches Vachim where the Gemara speaks about a topic that's similar to Ma'aseh Hasheni. That's the topic of Hektish. If you have something that belongs to the Beis Hamikdash, how does it belong to the Beis Hamikdash? So it was Machdash. The person was Machdash something to the Beis Hamikdash. We very rarely have shilas of Hektish today also, because the Gemara in Erechin says it's not a good idea to be Machdash. The Chum said that's a terrible idea to be Machdash, because what in the world are you going to do with it if you Machdash it? You're going to be stuck. You're going to have to do an opinion, a whole story. So we strongly discourage people from being Machdash things. Guy wants to, you know, get a jump on the Beis Hamikdash, so he'll set aside some stuff to bring as a carbon. Very bad idea, Bizman is it. But at least in the olden days, you had this concept of you had Dvarim which were floating around, which were Dvarim Shel Hekdesh. So the Torah tells us at the end of Sefer Vayikra that if a person has a Dvarim Shel Hekdesh, you have the ability to be paid the Dvarim Shel Hekdesh. You could redeem Hekdesh. How do you redeem Hekdesh? So you take the value, whatever the value of Hekdesh is, so you make a cheshbon. Let's say a person was Machdesh a chair to the Beis Hamikdash. What's the Beis Hamikdash going to do with a chair? So he's going to, you take money, and you figure out the chair is worth $50, so I'll transfer the Kedusha from the chair onto the money, and the money will go to the Beis Hamikdash, that they can use, and the chair becomes chulun again. So that's the parasha, the end of parasha, so Chakosai, the Torah speaks about being paid the Hekdesh, it could be paid the, if you're Machdesh a house, and you can be Machdesh if you're paid the chair, and you're paid the sticks and stones. The only thing you can't be paid there is if you were Machdesh an animal to be brought as a korban, and the animal, if the animal develops a mum, then you can be paid to that also. But if it doesn't have a mum, then you can't be paid to that. Then you have to bring it as a korban. So there's a concept of pidyon hekdesh. How do you evaluate how much the hekdesh is worth? So the whole sugya is about this, to figure out, you have to get the right amount, because you're not allowed to cheat hekdesh, you have to give them the right amount. What if, by mistake, or perhaps even intentionally, what if a person did in fact cheat Hekdesh? A person gave the less than the actual value to the Beis Hamikdash. So the Gemara raises the question, the fourth parak of Maseches Bava Metziah, maybe that should be the equivalent of a person sells you an item, I sell you a car, and I tell you the car's worth $10,000, and the car's really only worth $5,000. So I cheated you, or vice versa, I cheated you in terms of value of an item for sale. So the Gemara says that touches upon the parasha of Ono. The Torah tells us in Parashas Bahar that whenever I sell you something, I have to sell you the right price. And if I cheat you, then there are ramifications or consequences of cheating you. If it's a very, very small amount, a very minuscule amount, up to a sixth of the value, then we assume the party's probably moichel. If it's a sixth or more, then there are consequences. Sometimes the consequences are so severe that the whole sale is batel. Sometimes the consequences are not as serious. At least you have to return the part that you were cheated. Those are sugyas in the fourth parak of Bava Metziah, the different categories of Hilchos Hanoah. But by and large, there is a din whenever I'm involved in buying and selling, so I have to try to keep the price honest. And if there's a deviation from the price in either direction, that could potentially cause the entire deal to become unraveled. So I raise the same question when it comes to Pidyon Hekdesh. When I'm being paid the Hekdesh, so in a certain sense, I'm entering into a deal with the Beis Hamikdash. I'm buying something with the Beis Hamikdash. I was Machdesh the table to the Beis Hamikdash. Now it's Momen Hekdesh. And now when I go ahead and I give $100 to buy it back, so I'm buying and selling with the Beis Hamikdash. So is the Beis Hamikdash subject to these dinim or not? So the dinim of Ono, so the Gemara derives from a pasuk, no, that the whole parasha of Ono only applies between two Jews, chisim kovim kala amisecha, okar bi'ar amisecha, tori yishe zachiv, They only apply to Amisecha. Amisecha means your regular fellow, your neighbor. In contrast to Hekdesh, and when you try to buy and sell things at the Beis HaMikdash, so these dinim of Onoah don't apply. It doesn't mean you should try to cheat the Beis HaMikdash. It just means if you did, after the fact, no one's going to take you to a din Torah. So in theory, the Gemara says, if I have something that's really worth $100, and I went ahead, either intentionally or unintentionally, and I gave a nickel to the Beis HaMikdash, so b'diavad, the pidyon is going to be chal. That's what the Gemara has a phrase, a mashmuel, hekdesh shava mana shechilo shava pruta mechulo, that if I take something that's worth a money, worth $1,000, and I go ahead and I give a mere pruta for it, I give less than a pruta, less than a pruta is not moment b'chlal in halacha, but if I give a pruta for something that's worth much, much more, b'diavad, the pidyon is going to be chal, and the Gemara says that's based on the principle of ein onoah lehekdeshos. The Gemara says you're not allowed to do that. It's the wrong thing to do. It's bad to do it. You're a cheater for doing it. But the evidence is going to be chal. Comes the Gemara and says that it's a bad thing to do. That means in the olden days, when the money would really go to the Beis HaMikdash. So the Beis HaMikdash has a table worth $100. How dare you give them a nickel and call it a day? But what about Bezman Hazeh? What if somebody, by mistake, or on purpose, or whatever, Shalok Yedin, went ahead and was makdish something to the Beis HaMikdash? So now, the theoretical Beis HaMikdash today owns this table. What are they going to do with it? There's no Beis HaMikdash. What are they going to do with the table? And what am I going to do with the table? If I use the table, I'll be over the Yisra of Me'ila, I'll be Nenem in a Hekdesh, and that's a problem. So we have to get this Hekdesh to become Potu. There's no question, we've got to be Potu this Hekdesh. So how much money should I use to be Potu the Hekdesh? So I should, technically speaking, take $100, take the value of the Hekdesh, transfer the Kedusha onto the $100, and sure. And what am I going to do with the $100? I have to take the $100 and throw that into the garbage and throw it into the ocean. So, that's the chor what I should have to do. So the Gemara says, that's silly. So why should I lose $100? The whole problem is, I have to get rid of the issa of the Kedusha of Hekdesh. So I'll transfer the Kedusha from the table onto a nickel, and then I'll take the nickel and throw the nickel into the garbage. Why should I lose the extra $99.95? No one's getting anyway. In the days of the Beis HaMikdash, when the Beis HaMikdash would benefit from the money, so then I have no right to be stingy and cheat the Beis HaMikdash. As man as that, no one's making any money anyway. The Gizbarim, the Hekdesh, the treasures of the Beis HaMikdash don't exist. So there is no account for the Beis HaMikdash today. So just to take another $100 and throw into the garbage, that's silly. So just be told it in the easiest way possible, the least expensive way possible. I.e., take a pruta. So that's what we do with Banazeth. For the person, the Meshuggah who's marked something to the Beis HaMikdash today, that's what we tell him to do. He should be paid it on the smallest amount. So what does it have to do with us? We don't have, 99% of the time, we don't have Pidyon Hekdesh today. But we do have Pidyon Maaseh Sheni. We have a similar concept as Banazeth, which is relevant for anyone who goes to Eretz Yisrael. Or even if you buy fruit and vegetables here, come from Eretz Yisrael. A person has produce from Eretz Yisrael. So the halacha is you have to separate trumas, maisers, etc. One of the maisers that you have to separate in the 4 out of the 7 years is maiser sheni. So you separate maiser sheni. So I have these, I have my Jaff oranges, and I separated maiser sheni. So I took off a small part of the fruit, a tenth of the fruit, as maiser sheni. What am I going to do with that maiser sheni? So in theory, I should go to Yerushalayim and go eat in Yerushalayim with Kedusha V'Tahara. Well, I see you can't do that. First of all, you're not Torah. It's not Torah. There's no Beis HaMikdash, so you can't eat Beis HaSheni. Anyway, it's not Shach. You can't eat that Beis HaSheni. So what should you do? You can't just leave it around. It's also to eat it. So you have to be Paydes. So you have to be Mechala. You have to transfer the Beis HaSheni onto coins. And then you hold on to the coins, and eventually you'll discard the coins at the right time. So how much value of coins, how much should those coins be worth, which you're going to use to transfer the Kedusha onto? So the same way we said when it comes to Pidyon Hekdesh, you're not supposed to cheat the Beis HaMikdash. So you're not supposed to cheat Beis HaSheni as well. So you're supposed to try to figure out to the best of your ability whether this is the correct value of the Beis HaSheni or not. So come to Rishayim and write, nah, you don't have to bother doing that today. In the olden days, when Maaseh Sheni really existed, so you would be paid the Maaseh Sheni onto coins. Then you would use those coins to come 6 months later to Yerushalayim and buy fruit, and you would eat those fruit, but Kedushas Maaseh Sheni. So then you have to really be careful. You don't want to cheat out the mitzvah Maaseh Sheni, so you want to get the exact value of the fruit. Whereas today, you're going to be pulled on the coins. What are you going to do with the coins? You're never going to use these coins. These coins are not going to Yerushalayim to buy fruit with, because the same way you couldn't eat the original Maaseh Sheni in Tuma, you can't eat the fruit that's bought with Maaseh Sheni coins with Tuma either. So these coins are going absolutely nowhere. They're going to sit in your drawer for the next 3 years. At the end of the 3-year cycle, every Shemitah cycle is divided into two different parts. the seventh year is applying for Shemitah, but the other 6 years, there's 3 and 3. So at the end of each of the 3 year mid-cycles of the 6 year cycle, there's a din of biur. Biur means you have to finish up everything. Whatever you have in your house, trumas, maizes, everything has got to be discarded. So you're supposed to have eaten all your maizes sheni by that point. If you have maizes sheni coins that can't be used anymore, so you have to destroy them. You have to throw them into the ocean, into the Amelach, into hydrochloric acid in the MTA lab. That's what we've been doing over the last couple of years, last couple of beer cycles. You get rid of the coins in a matter of whatever shape or form, you can get rid of them. So anyway, this money is going to the garbage. So why should I? I have hundreds and hundreds of dollars in my Sesheni. So I'm going to be paid to them on hundreds and hundreds of dollars of coins. I want to do the coins. Coins are going to the garbage. That's silly. It's maltashkes. So why did I just be paid there the hundreds and thousands of dollars of my Sesheni on the one tiny coin, on the one prut, on the one nickel, on the one shekel, and call it a day? And then at the end of 3 years, I'll take that one shekel and throw it into the garbage. So that's what the Rishon write. That's what we do. The same way the Gemara says you could do that for Pidyon Hekdesh. That in theory is supposed to be pulled to the correct value, but with manazet, that's purpose. There's no purpose, so we do it just on a pruta. So we carry over that principle that appears in Erichin vis-a-vis Pidyon Hekdesh and plug it into Ma'aseh Sheni, which is relevant. So say in Eretz Yisrael today, if companies being mafresh, Tenuva is being mafresh, hundreds and millions and millions and millions of dollars worth of Ma'aseh Sheni, so what are they doing with it? So the answer is they're taking on billions of dollars of Ma'aseh Sheni and they're putting it onto one shekel, and they're eventually after 3 years they'll get rid of that one shekel and they'll throw it out, throw it into the garbage, and show it. But otherwise, Bizman, in the olden days, you would have to make such a cheshbon to make sure you don't cheat the Ma'aseh Sheni.
Could you decide the Ma'aseh Sheni money on the condition that you might have used Ma'aseh Sheni, and therefore you're saying I'm allocating this amount? Let's say you went through all the cycle. You don't know what you did or not.
Would you ate it by mistake?
Well, you don't know because you bought fruit, you know, in the market. You don't know from Israel. You don't know if it was from Eretz Israel or... You know, can you go and say, okay, listen, I don't know whether I eat or didn't. I'm going to put and allocate it.
Well, you can only be mechal Ma'aseh Sheni if it's still here. If I ate it already, it's too late to be mechal.
You can't do it, but you know, on tonight.
But you can't be pulled if you don't own it yet. You can't. That's a complicated sugi about being pulled to something you don't even own. That would be potentially problematic. So any time a person has any fruit from Eretz Yisrael, so you have to go through the process of Pidyon Ma'aseh Sheni if it's a Ma'aseh Sheni year. So the Rishonim, in a sense, took this idea that exists in the Gemara vis-a-vis Hekdesh and then plugged it into Chos Ma'aseh Sheni. Then the Rishonim said that this applies for us in another context as well, in the context of Ravoi. The Torah says in Parshas Kedoshim that the first 3 years of a fruit tree, you're not permitted to eat the fruit. That's called Orla. And the fourth year is called Ravoi, Kodesh Yilul Hashem. So what does that mean? What are you supposed to do with it? It's Kodesh, it's holy. What do you do with something that's holy? So the Gemara says, we have a tradition, we have a Gezeirah Shavah, going back to Moshe Rabbeinu, Kodesh, Kodesh, Ma'aseh Sheni. The Torah uses the word Kodesh by Ravoi fruit, and uses the word Kodesh by Ma'aseh Sheni. Just as Ma'aseh Sheni, you take two Shalayim, or if you can't, then you have to repo it. So to Ravoi, the fourth year fruit is also either taken to Yerushalayim, or if you can't, then you have to repo it. Again, all the halachas of Ma'aseh Sheni carry over to Ravoi. That's a din deraisa based on this Gzeirah Shavah of Kodesh Kodesh. So the Rishonim have a machlokes, whether this din appears, whether this din applies in Chutz La'aretz. What's the shaila? Orla does apply in Chutz La'aretz. The Gemara says in Kedushin, there's a halacha Moshe Mesinai that all is Chutz La'aretz applies. We just spoke about this in the Kol Bokhim, right? A couple of days ago, we spoke about all is Chutz La'aretz. There's a special halacha Moshe Mesinai that all is Chutz La'aretz exists, even though it should have been agricultural mitzvah Le'baretz, but that's the din. Kach nemar halacha Moshe Mesinai. So Taisa and the Rambam have a machlokes, when we say that Orla applies in Chutz La'aretz, does that mean only the prohibition of the first 3 years? Does that apply to the fourth year fruit as well? Is there a din of Ravoi in Chutz La'aretz? So the Rambam has a chiddush that there's no din of Ravoi in Chutz La'aretz. And Taisus writes, no, there is. Taisus writes that there is a din potentially of Ravoi in Chutz La'aretz. But in Eretz Yisrael, for sure there's a din of Ravoi. Bismanazeh, for sure there's Ravoi. So if you have 3 year fruit, you can't eat it. If you have fourth year fruit, then you have to be paid there. So we do potentially have these Dvarim Kedoshim floating around Bismanazeh, either Ma'aseh Sheni in Eretz Yisrael, or Ravoi, maybe even in Chutz La'aretz. We do have holy things that are floating around today. So how do we pay to them? So the Rishonim write, Taisus writes in Brachos, the Minhag HaOlam has been for hundreds, thousands of years, is that you pay it on a little coin, and sure, eventually you get rid of that. You get rid of that coin. So the Vilna Gaon raises the question about this practice has been going on for hundreds and thousands of years of being paid in Ma'aseh Sheni and Ravoi on very, very small amounts of coins. What exactly is that based on? When it comes to Pidyon Hekdesh, so the Gemara says in the fourth parak of B'Metzia, the only reason why that practice works is because it's Eino Nol Hekdeshos. The practice of an offense, cheating the Beis HaMikdash, so to speak, is only true because the dinim of Onah, the parsha of Parshas Behar of Onah, of the price cheating person in prices, doesn't apply to the Mikdash, because of Gzeres HaKos, of Chisim Kormim Kala Amisecha, Amisecha Vlo LeHekdash. So comes the Gra and says, how do we view Maisa Sheni, or Revoi by extension? Is that considered to be La Amisecha? Is that considered to be belonging to the other person? Is that a buying and selling between people? Or is that somehow a Kedusha Dik Alocha? Is that a Hekdash Dik Alocha? So says the Gra, he thinks that that question, whether there's a no in the realm of Maisa Sheni, boils down to one simple question, what we've been talking about for the last two shiurim, namely, is Ma'is HaSheni fundamentally private money, or is Ma'is HaSheni fundamentally Kaddish money? Do you hold Ma'is HaSheni Mamon Hedyot, or do you hold that Ma'is HaSheni is Mamon Gavoa? If Ma'is HaSheni is Mamon Hedyot, it's like buying and selling with regular people, so then says the girl, wait a second, then there's a problem of Onoa. Then you can't be paid the Ma'is HaSheni on one pruta. Forget about whether Beis HaMikdash is losing, not losing, it's going to throw it out, it doesn't matter. If the dinim of Onoa apply, then you must give the right amount. Even with the pigeon will not be chal. The only way to justify the practice, what we've been doing for thousands of years, of being paid the Ma'is HaSheni and Revoi on very, very small amounts of money, is working with the assumption that Ma'is HaSheni is in the realm of Hekdesh. Just as Hekdesh is excluded from Onoa, because it says, V'chisim kumim gala ambisecha, la'amisecha, below the Hekdesh, so to Ma'is HaSheni is closer to Hekdesh. Ma'is HaSheni, the model of things, is closer to the Hekdesh model than it is to the Hedya, to the regular Ba'ilim model. It's only because we passed Ma'is HaSheni Mamon Gavoa, which up until now we thought was in a sense a Chumrah. We kept on saying, oh no, Ma'is HaSheni Mamon Gavoa, and therefore you can't use it for Kedushin, and therefore you can't use it for Nesri, and you can't use it for Matzah. We had all the limitations from last week's year and this week's year. Ma'is HaSheni Mamon Gavoa doesn't belong to me, Gavalt. So here comes the Gruan and says, yeah, but that's great. The fact that it doesn't belong to you is going to help you. It's going to save you millions of dollars. Because if you would have held the Ma'is HaSheni Mamon Gavoa, then Pidyon Ma'is HaSheni would have looked very, very different for Zman Hazeh. Anytime you want to redeem Ma'is HaSheni, you would have had to redeem it, mamish down to the last penny. So in Eretz Yisrael, it would have cost us billions and billions of dollars in pigeon Ma'is HaSheni, and what would we have done with the money? We'd throw it into the garbage anyway. We would have gained mamish nothing. So Baruch Hashem says the Gra, he doesn't say that, but I said that part. Baruch Hashem, we pass him Ma'is HaSheni Mamon Gavoa, and that turns out to be a tremendous kula. So the question whether Ma'is HaSheni Mamon Gavoa, Ma'is HaSheni Mamon Hedyo, to phrase the question, is it a chumrah or is it a kula, is not really an accurate way of describing it. It's a statement. It's a halachic question. Is it Mamon Gavoa? Is it Mamon Hedyo? If it's Mamon Gavoa, then it belongs in the realm of Beis HaMikdash, of Hekdesh, and therefore you can't be Mekadosh and Isha with it, and you can't use it for Luv and Esrog, and you can't use it for Matz, etc. But it is subject to the kula of Ein Onoa LeHekdesh. If it's fundamentally Ma'is HaSheni Mamon Hedyo, so then it's basically private money, and that's good for Kedushin, and good for Lulav and Esrog, and good for Matz, good for Chal, that's all wonderful, but in terms of Pidyon, you run into a problem, because then it's bound by the regular dinim of Chesh and Mishpat, which carry with it the Pasha of Onoa. So again, following the line of reasoning we've been talking about for the last couple of shiurim, we've been trying to identify different types of property that may not necessarily belong to me. We started off the shiurim 4 or 5 weeks ago, this overall topic of Bailah, saying that normally if I own something, I buy it, it's mine, finished. But now you have all these different kind of areas of halacha, which is very unclear, gray areas, who exactly owns a particular item. But one thing seems pretty clear from what we spoke about, the topic of Ma'is HaSheni, is that when I have something that's Hekdesh is not mine. Once I'm Makdesh to the Beis HaMikdash, that's it, I'm done, finished. It's Yotze Mishusi, Yotze Shali, it's not mine, B'chlal. All the regular dinim of Bailas don't apply. If I want to use the Davashal Hekdesh for private purposes, that's an Isra of Me'ila. So that's Mamish, not mine. It's not even a question that it's mine. But when I have a Davashal Hekdesh, it's not considered to be private property, that there are a whole series of halachas that usually govern private property that don't apply in situations of Hekdesh. One of them being the case we mentioned before of Onoa, but there are many others as well. Say, Lamashal, there's a din that if I steal something from you, I'm caught, so I have to pay kefil. If I'm a ganav, I pay kefil. Gazan doesn't pay kefil, but a ganav, if I steal something, break into your house, and I steal your animal, I steal your table, if I'm caught, Yishalim Shnayim L'Re'eyu, I have to pay kefil. So the Torah says, Yishalim Shnayim L'Re'eyu, L'Re'eyu V'lo L'Hekdesh, that if I steal something from your house, but that item happens to be a Davashal Hekdesh, You will makdish this animal to the base of Mikdash. You will makdish this table to the base of Mikdash. And I go ahead and I steal it. So that's not called a gan of the tzchayv to be kefil, because yishalem shnayim le-re'eyu. Re'eyu means it's mom and re'eyu. Means that you have bailus on it. Once you makdish it, then your bailus is plucka. Well, let's say similarly, we said before about ono, that there are no dinim of ono on something which is not la'amisecha. La'amisecha means it's private property. If it belongs to Hekdesh, even though it may be sitting in your house, there's no dinim of ono. Well, let's say la'moshel hilchos shvuos. We've spoken about this a lot in Kol Avoka this year. There are dinim in the Torah of hilchos shvuos that if I get into a dintar with you, I say you owe me 100, and you say you only owe 50, or if I say you owe me 100, Eidechet says you owe, you will do all the 100. Again, it's a shomer, a lot of cases in the Torah of a cheshvuos. So comes the Mishnah in the Metzian and Shvuos and says, Einish banal hakdeshes, that all the dinim of shvuos don't apply to hakdesh min Torah, because shvuos only apply kitin ishal re'eyu. It has to belong to the person. Re'eyu always means a private person. The Gemara has many, many, many dinim that are limited to only private individuals, not within the realm of Hekdesh. Hekdesh, by definition, is considered to be something which is not Shel Re'ehu. Does this apply to all Hekdesh, or there are some possible exceptions to this rule? So there is an important sugya that appears in the first parak of the Kama and the second parak of Kedushin, a machlekes atenoim between Rabbi Yossi Aglili and the Chachamim, whether this din that Hekdesh, Kavanas, are generally not called private property, is this always true? So Rabbi Yossi Aglili draws a distinction within different types of karbonos. Rabbi Yossi Aglili says there's a difference between kachim kalim and kachim kachim. We say in Ezim Kovan in the morning, so all the karbonos are divided up into two categories. So there's the higher group of Kedusha, the karbon Ohr, the Chattas, the Ashim, etc. Then the lower level of karbonos, the Todim, the Shlomim, the Pesach, those are the kachim kalim. So Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, when it comes to kachim kachim, the higher level of karbonos, I understand why I'm not the owner anymore. You know why? When I'm makdish as animals of karbon Chattas, I'm going to walk away with absolutely nothing from this animal. I'm not going to be able to ride this animal. I'm not going to be able to sell the animal. I'm not even going to be able to eat the meat of the animal. It's going to go to the Kohanim. Or if it's a Kohen Ola, no one's going to eat the meat. Kohen Oshem, the Kohanim are going to eat it. I have mamish no shaykhus to this animal anymore. So Rabbi Yossi Aglili says that it makes a lot of sense to say that kachim kachim, a moment gavoa, belongs to the Rebbeinu Shlomo. It's not mine anymore. But what if it's kachim kalim? So kachim kalim is a whole different story. Kachim kalim means a makdish animal to be brought as a korban shlomim. Who's going to eat this animal? I'm going to eat the animal. A very small part's going to go to the kohen. A very small part's going to go on to the mizbeach. But 90% of the animal is going to be eaten by me, or you have a korban toida, or if you have a korban pesach, I'm going to walk away with the animal at the end. I have to bring it as a korban, I have to shech the animal, there are dinim that govern what I have to do before I can partake of the animal, but tach, at the end of the day, I'm going to get to eat the meat. So Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, when you have kachim kalim, so then we have a special halacha that teaches us that kachim kalim are mamon bailim, that they really do belong to the individual. You have to treat them in a certain manner, but fundamentally they're considered to be mamon bailim. And therefore Rabbi Yossi Aglili says that in theory, if I have an animal that was set aside as kachim kalim, and you steal it, and you're caught, you have to pay kefil, because you stole my animal. Well, if I get into a din Torah with you about an animal that's kachim, I claim you took my animal that's kachim kalim, and you say you did, and Erechet says you did, there would be a shvur deraisa, because according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, kachim kalim a mamon bailim, and the Chum disagreed. The Chum said there's no such thing. It's a big question how we pass it. Do we follow Rabbi Yossi Aglili, or do we follow the other view? Do you have any other cases where you can have something which is, on the one hand, kodesh, on the other hand, it's still considered to be re'eyu, it's still considered to belong to the person? So the Gemara has in the seventh parak of the Kama, the Mishnah quotes Machlekes Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanon about the following type of hekdesh. We know that when a person is makdish an animal to the base of mikdash, so you can be makdish in one of two ways. You can either be makdish as a neder, or you can be makdish as a nedava. What's the difference between the two phrases? So a neder means that the person formulates the promise to give it to the base of mikdash using a phrase of harei alai, that I accept upon myself to bring a gift to the base of mikdash, harei alai. So I obligate myself, personal obligation, to bring an animal. And then, the next week or so, I decide, oh, this is a good animal, I'll pick this one, this will be a good animal to bring. What if something happens to that animal? So then, I have to bring another animal, because I formulated my obligation as a personal obligation, a re'alai, I was makabla chrayis to bring this korban. And until I actually bring a korban, I'm going to be held responsible, I'm going to be a violation of val yachal devaro, this week's pasha, coming up in this week's pasha. Then there's another kind of an offering of a korban, and that's harei zo, depending on whether you want to say proper tiktok or not. So the person says that this animal should be a korban. So So he never accepts anything personally. He says, this particular animal will go as a korban. What is the significance of that? And the Mishnah says, kol zman that animal's around, you have to bring it as a korban. And what if something happens to that animal? What if that animal dies? The animal gets stolen? The animal gets lost? So it's not my problem. I don't have to reimburse the Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMikdash takes the loss. So if I formulated my Kabbalah, my Neder, as a Lashon Neder Elai, that obligates me personally. If I formulated it, Lashon Harei Zil as a Nedava, so then I'm not going to be held responsible. So come the Chacham and say, that's wonderful and beautiful, but that's irrelevant to our discussion. The Chacham say that any time I have an animal that's Kadosh, whether it was originally Bitaras Neder, whether it was originally Bitaras Nedava, doesn't really make much of a difference. The animal belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore there's no Shavuos, there's no Onan, there's no Kefal, there's no Hay, there's nothing. All the Dinim of Re'eu don't apply, because Lamaisa, the animal doesn't belong to me. And Rabbi Shimon disagrees. Rabbi Shimon says no. That Kachim Shechayev Yachriyusan, any carbon that I have Achrayus for, that I'm responsible for, so what do you mean it doesn't belong to me? If it does belong to me, so how come you're sending me a bill if something happens to it? Obviously it belongs to me. So Rabbi Shimon says the fact that I have Achrayus, that I have responsibility on something, that in and of itself is a measure of bailus. We prove that I am really the owner. I do have a real ownership over this item, dafka because I have a chrayis on it. Chrayis and bialis go hand in hand. So therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon, all the dinim that we usually exclude hektish from, onan, shvuah, shomer, kefil, that whole list that appears in the Mishnah of Metziah, dinim that require re'eu, that require human ownership, so Rabbi Shimon draws the line and says, kachim don't belong to me, but kachim shechai v'achavivson do in fact belong to me. So we happen not to pass like Rabbi Shimon. We fasken that all karbanos, even kachim shechai v'achavivson don't apply to me. Why is this, Rabbi Shimon, Rabban, why is this relevant to us bechlau? So those who are learning tafyoimi will remember that not all that long ago, Rabbi Shimon made an appearance in the very beginning of Maseches Pesachim. The Gemara in Pesachim, Daf Hamad Beis, goes back to discussing the dinim by Rav Matze, because we spoke about a lot of times in terms of ownership. The Gemara says, that you're not allowed to own chametz, you're not allowed to have chametz in your house that belongs to you. So first you have to decide in Cheshe Mishpat, is the chametz yours, is the chametz not yours? So what's an example of something that's not yours? Hektish. If a person is makdish a pizza, and now he has the pizza sitting in his house over Pesach, that's not his problem. And I tell you, that's not called by Rav Matze. The same way you can have chomish akum, so you can have chomish hektish also. It's not shulchah shulchah yet aroya kach nemer aloch marsim nemer tesh rapesh shulchah yet aroya aval taroya shulachayim. So comes the Gemara and says that there's an exception to this rule. Sometimes I'm not even permitted to have a goy's chometz in my house. When is that? If I'm a kabbal achrayus on this chometz. Let's say a goy comes over to me erev Pesach and says, "Do me a favor. I'm giving you a couple of bottles of schnapps. Watch them for me and watch them very carefully because if something happens to them, I'm going to ask you to reimburse me." So I'm a nice guy. I say, "Yeah, no problem. Put the chometz down. Put it inside of the. I'll watch it. I'll be in charge. If something happens, I'll pay you back for it." So the Gemara says, "I'm over by Rav Matzeh Bider Aisa. Why? Even though I don't own the chometz, but I have kabbalas achrayus on the chometz. I'm watching over the chometz. I've accepted to watch over the chometz. I have achrayus on the chometz. That's enough to rechayev me by Rav Matzeh." So the Gemara says, "Why is that? Where does that come from? That having achrayus on something is a reflection of ownership." So the Gemara says, "I'll tell you where it comes from. It comes from Rabbi Shimon. According to Rabbi Shimon, who says what's called mdavar agarim l'mamon kibamandami. Rabbi Shimon says that your kabbalas achrayus treats the hektesh and now becomes yours. The fact that you're responsible for something makes it belong to you. So too in Uchas Chametz, the fact that you're responsible for it makes it belong to you. But what about according to the Chachamim? The Gemara says, according to the Chachamim, this din shouldn't be true. The Gemara says, no. Even the Chachamim agree here. Even though in other areas of Halach and Kachim, the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Shimon, but when it comes to Rav Matzeh, there's a special pasuk, Lo Yimatzeh, a special Gzeh, a special drash that teaches us that Kabbalas Achrayus does create bailus for the purposes of Rav Matzeh. So the Machlokes of Shimon the Rabbanon is theoretically related to this, but at the end, the Gemara rejects it. The Gemara says that when it comes to Barav Matzeh, everybody agrees Kabbalas Achrayus does play a role. So this is relevant for us. So when it comes to Barav Matzeh, one has to be careful not to have any Kabbalas Achrayus on Chomesh or Akum. We run into this problem all the time. Let's say we sell a Chomesh before Pesach to Mr. Brown. And Mr. Brown is leaving all the chametz in our property. So if we would have a chrayus on this chametz, we would be in a pickle. We would be over by Rav Matzeh. So we write specifically in the Shtar Mechir's chametz that even though the chametz is sitting in our property, we take absolutely no responsibility, zero, zippo responsibility for this chametz. Anything happens, it's completely at the loss of Mr. Brown. If we would not write that, if we would really have a degree of responsibility on that, then that would undermine the entire Mechir's chametz. We would accomplish nothing because Kabbalas Achrayus is an issue. So this issue of Kabbalas Achrayus, does that create a according to Rabbi Shimon, in all areas of Halacha does, and we who disagree with Rabbi Shimon, we hold it's very, very limited scope, at least in the realm vis-a-vis by Rabbi Matzah. I think we could pretty much pick a siyum on these sugyas. We're learning that for about 2 months or so. The notion of bialus, the notion of ownership, who owns what, is a very complex area of halacha, and it impacts in so many different areas of halacha in terms of erchaim, yudeya, karbonis, so many different shailas that come up, which all revolve around basic questions. When you have people are watching things, and you have shutfim, and you have matnas kahuna, and you have hektesh, you have all these funny kinds of quasi ownership. Who is the real owner? With nafkaminas, ladin, and so many areas of halacha that speak to us this month. Okay. We'll stop for now, and I'm going to the summer. We'll figure out what we're learning from the cash.